Brighten up your home with help from Menards. Illuminate your home with LED light bulbs from Fight Electric. They provide light that lasts with a rated life of over 10,000 hours. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Fight Electric LED light bulbs now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hello?
Hi, is this Kelsey?
It is.
Hey, it's Brianna. How are you?
How are you?
Good.
Joy of cell phones, right?
I mean, it's like technology. It's like you have to have it, but it has its own brain. I don't.
Amen, sister.
So, first of all, thanks for, like, you know, reaching out to me and wanting to do this. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So you, all right, let's start back from the beginning here. Because I've never met you before, so I'm a little like,
correct.
I don't know, this is my first one.
You're
and I'm like,
who
don't
is
really
girl?
Know them.
Huh? You're like, who is this girl?
Who is this person? But no, it's okay, because I do the same thing.
Yeah.
And I love that. Like, I love like-minded women that are go-getters and are nice.
Yes.
And are hustlers. That seems to be a rarity these days in the horse industry.
It sure is. It sure. I'll tell you what, between the tack business and the horse business, like, there's days that I'm just like, I just can't do this anymore. I need to sit down and have a beer because I'm just worn out.
Well, it's, you know, and, well, I don't know if you ever heard of Be More Media, but we do shirts and we do engraving and awards. We do embroidery, too. We don't do tack. I'm not, bless your heart, for doing tack. I'm not even, no. But it is, like, more, I think it requires more emotional intelligence and patience when you specifically work in the horse industry like you and I do. Am I wrong?
Patience is key. I mean, it is definitely a virtue. It absolutely
Do you ever
is.
Have, like, crazy situations like that? I mean, do you think it's more...
So I've had it on both ends, with the horse end and the tack end. I mean, the biggest thing that I've found right now with the tack industry is, and I don't know if it's the generation, I don't know if it's COVID related, I honestly don't know, but the like the entitlement of wanting it now and ordering it like, you know, I'm a one-man show. I am a custom pack maker. I cut all my leather. I do everything by hand. And it's one of those deals, like, when people order, you know, I try and go over everything as, you know, intricate as possible.
Yeah, you got
people
some pretty
want
stuff.
It. Thank you. People want it now. Like, if they order it, they expect it shipped the next day. And, you know, you try and stress, like, I always tell people it can be anywhere from 3 weeks to 12 weeks. It really just depends. And some of the things, like, with conchos and things like that, you know, some of those custom conchos, they're handmade. And they take, it might take 6 weeks to get to me. So that's probably the biggest thing that I have learned through the years, is trying to explain the process to people and trying to, you know, myself even have as much patience as possible, because, you know, it's a dog eat dog world. I mean, it really truly is. And the people,
it's gotten worse. And for how long have you been doing it?
So
in general, like, for a while,
for 10 years.
Oh, yes, yeah, so you do know. You've seen. So you can, okay.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's, like, I know myself, whether it be the tack, the horse, whatever I get into, I really am a firm believer in doing it wholeheartedly and having the best product that I can make, whether it be animal, you know, an animal like a horse or tack or whatever. I want it to be the best that it can be and that I can make it. So, like, I really take pride in my work, and everything has a lifelong guarantee, you know. And it's so funny, because I had a girl, she had bought a tack set. She had had it a year. I have no idea how she took care of it. You know, I know myself, like, I am hard on stuff. Like,
the breast collar I sew in is the breast collar I ride in every day. And I ride, you know, 3 to 7 horses a day. So, my stuff has to last because all of my packets, funny, my husband laughed at me a few years ago. I had made like a local magazine cover for our local rodeo association, and I had a piece of baler twine like holding my mare's bonnet in place. And he's like, my word, like, you are a leather maker. What are you doing? And I'm like, it's just a superstition thing with me, and all of my stuff is always like stuff that I messed up on or has a flaw or whatever, because, you know, I don't want to sell that, or it just happened. I still liked it or whatever. So, anyway, it's funny because
that's funny. No, that's funny you say that, because I do the same thing, like with embroidery. Like, I mean, I make mistakes. Trust me.
You're human. We all make mistakes.
But you don't want to throw it away. Like for me, I'm like, this is a nice jacket or a nice vest, or, you know, I'm like, I don't want to throw it away. And so I end up wearing it.
Absolutely. And I just like, sometimes I'll sell the stuff and I'll just put it out there like it has this flaw or whatever. But most of the time I just keep it for myself. And anyway, this girl, she had had this tack set for over a year, and it was a crystal tack set. And let's face it, like, crystals, they're tough. Like, it doesn't matter how good you set them, you glue them, set them, this, that, whatever. You know, you hit a barrel with that, the crystal can shatter, the rivet can pop off, whatever. Like, it happens. Like, I mean, give me that plain Jane braided leather, because, buddy, that's what I'm working with. Anyway, she had the tack set a year, and I guess a couple of the crystals had come off, and I just told her she wanted a refund, and I'm like, listen, like, you've had it a year, like, I'm more than happy to fix it. Just ship it back, like, you cover shipping and I will cover everything else. And let me tell you, like, that was not good enough. Like, she expected me to cover all the shipping, to fix the tack set, which I had no problem fixing the tack set. You know, there was a couple of crystals that, like, the rivets had come off and things like that.
Yeah, but it's been a year.
Right. It's been a year. And like I said, she might have taken the best care of it. And she hit a barrel that day, and, you know, a rivet came unset. So, like, that can happen. Or she might have been one of those people like me that, you know, use that sucker hard every day and, like, whatever. Again, I don't know. But I'm telling you what, it got to the point that I told her, I said, listen, these are your options. Like, I am more than happy to fix it, but you have to send it back and pay the shipping for me to ship it back out, because let's face it, just like everything in this economy, it's gone up. And she was like, no, I want you to cover all the shipping and cover all this, like, this, it shouldn't have fallen apart. And I'm like, it's not that the craftsmanship of it fell apart. Like, this happens with crystal tack sets. And I even put that into my invoices, like, you know, things can happen. She went on to social media, like, put me on, like, a bad tack seller, like, all these things. And, you know, at first it really bothered me, because I truly, like, I want to make that customer happy. But at the end of the day, the nonsense of, like, I want it paid for, and I want to send tomorrow, and I want it fixed, and I want you to overnight it back to me, and I'm going to call you at 7 in the morning and 9 o'clock at night because I want to know where my tack set is or if it's been done or whatever. Like, the entitlement today, it's tough. So patience is absolutely a key to success in any business that you
I'm just like, oh, hold on a second. Hold on. Pump the brakes. I am absolutely just mind blown that she contacted you a year later. I mean, it would be different if somebody bought a tack set and let's say a week later it started falling apart. That's like a different, that's a whole nother different story. But if I had something for a year, that's wild. And I've been blasted too. And I think that, you know, it really got
social media. I actually had listened to one of your podcasts the other day, and it was about buying and selling horses and things like that. And one of the things was talking about, like, mean girls and how social media has, it's such a hinder in the business, really, because you can bend over backwards for people and you can sell 100 great horses or 100 great tack sets. But if there is one with one bad apple, that's the one that gets you every time, because people get on that keyboard and they want the world to know their story.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, you could probably relate to what I'm going to say. Like, you know, running a business pre-social media, it wasn't like that. And it's like now people can just, you know, you can say your opinion and say what you want, absolutely, but don't lie. Like, just don't blatantly lie. Like,
absolutely.
You're hurting somebody's livelihood here.
Absolutely. And I will say, like, you know, like I told you from the get-go, like, I'm a one-man show. Sometimes, like, I take longer than the tack maker down the road. You know what I mean? Like, that's just how it goes. And that has been a learning curve for me, just prioritizing time between, you know, two businesses and my little one that's special needs. Like, it can be trying at times, absolutely.
Special needs. Do you have a little boy or a little girl?
I have a little boy. He's 10. He has Williams syndrome, which is super rare. We had no idea when he was born anything was wrong. Like, physically, everything looked fine. But let me tell you, he was the most miserable baby. Bless his heart. Like, he, and I just kept saying to my husband, I'm like, something is wrong. Something is wrong. And, like, I kept taking him to the doctor, and the doctor finally told me something was wrong with me, that, like, I had postpartum. And I'm like, listen, I'm happy to go talk to somebody. I will take medication if that's what you think. But, like, I'm not wanting to hurt him or myself. Like, that's not how I feel. I'm telling you something is wrong with this baby. And he's like, oh, you're a first-time mom, blah, blah, blah. And just kind of
You cannot off. Deny that intuition. That intuition was strong. You knew something was up.
Yes. And when he was 4 months old, I had went to the beach with my family, my sisters, and I have two sisters and my mom and dad, and my oldest sister has three kids. And being around him, she was like, Kelsey, like, babies don't cry like this. Like, something is wrong. And I broke down crying. I'm like, I know something's wrong. Well, long story short, I took him to a different pediatrician, and I just, you know, laid it all out. I'm like, something is wrong. Please help me, because something's wrong. And he said something about a heart murmur. And long story short, he got us in at Children's Hospital the next day, which right then and there, I knew something was wrong. And Keaton had open heart surgery a week later. Actually had open heart on Christmas Eve, 2013.
Holy cow. That's props. To both of you to be able to get through that. Like, that's a lot of stress right there. That's not just your little doctor.
Let me tell you, it was stressful, you know, being a first-time mom, like,
right.
That's stressful in itself. It was stressful on my marriage. It was stressful on my mental health. Like, it was extremely hard. It was extremely hard.
Well, you just hit on something, you know, you just hit on something with the whole, like, medical industry. You know, it's frustrating as a consumer, because we're basically consumers, you know, they're not God, to go somewhere, keep going somewhere, and have somebody tell you, it's you, there's nothing wrong, but the whole time you're like, there's something wrong. I mean, that's frustrating in itself.
Absolutely, and I remember saying to my husband, I'm like, you know, because we were kind of at each other's wits ends, because I was that saying, mama bear, let me tell you, like, I was a mama bear. And I said to my husband, I'm like, I don't understand why everyone thinks, like, I'm such a mama bear and I'm so crazy. Like, dogs and horses and animals, they know when, like, their young isn't right. Why wouldn't it be?
Yeah.
And he thought about that, and he was like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, it's something, if you truly feel this way, like, I don't know what to tell you, but the doctors are saying everything's fine. Well, anyway, Williams syndrome is extremely rare. Like, there's one, there's 30,000 worldwide that have it, which,
holy,
think about
cow.
30,000, and you're like, that's a lot. But if you actually break down, like, the population just in your town or your state, that's a very limited number of people. So it's not super well known. you know, at, like, things could be so much worse. We're really blessed that he, yeah. for the most part, is healthy. I mean, he struggles with his heart, and he has some developmental delays. But one thing with Williams syndrome, they are so extremely happy and outgoing, and, like, the empathy that he has, I can promise you, if you ever met him, you would never have met somebody like him. Like, he is just the most, he feels with every being in his body. And it's
that'll just, probably help him out in the long run, though.
Yes. And, like, he's super happy. Like, he literally, it's like, when we go to the grocery store, I laugh. It's like he should be like the mayor, because he's saying hello to everybody and how is your day going? And he just wants to conversate with everyone. And that's part of his condition is these kiddos and adults, they're just super, super outgoing. And like he has no stranger danger. And like that's one thing in the horse community. It's been nice, you know, because we are a tight-knit community. Like, yeah. My husband had qualified for the American a few years ago, and we had went and spent 2 weeks down there. And let me tell you, we were from Pennsylvania, and we went to Texas, and we were at a barrel race, and we both were like, we always end up like a drag or two apart. So we're both on horses, you know, trying to warm up, but trying to watch him, and he's playing in a sand pit. And this lady was like, listen, like, I'm happy to watch him. And of course, like, I mean, that was super kind of her, but I didn't know who she was. Like, I wasn't about to leave him, you know, but it was just nice that our community is that way in one breath. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
and we've had, you know, we had at first the doctors told us he wouldn't make it to 5. And he's 10, he'll be 11 this year. And so he's definitely
awesome.
Yes, he is a walking miracle, but our local horse industry and community, a good friend, Peggy Long, had put a benefit on for him. And it was extremely touching and pretty amazing to see people come out of the woodwork to support him enough. Yeah. So it was a pretty neat situation. And in such a dark time, there was, you know, happiness and joy that came out of it.
That's comforting whenever you're going through something like that or anything traumatic or challenging and stuff. To find out that other people are, like, there for you in a good way, that's comforting. That's enough to keep you get through something, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because there for a long time, it was like, you know, who knows? I mean, when the doctor did the open heart, he had told us he couldn't believe that he had not had a heart attack at this point because he doesn't produce elastin, so as he grows, like, his blood vessels and arteries do not. So it was like somebody who had like a 90% blockage that would typically go in for stents because they're going to have a heart attack. That's how he was at 6 months old.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Props to you, Mom, because, like, I would have been lost it. I would have been like, oh, God, what am I going to do?
It was a tough
this?
Time. I mean, I had a tough go. I broke my leg the day that I had him. It was just, you know, sometimes when it rains, it pours, but you just got to figure out how to paddle
God looked at you and said, you can handle it.
I guess. I mean, sometimes I'm like, holy smokes, like, I just need a break. But, yeah, it was definitely a trying time, and it was tough because he was such a tough baby because he was in pain and we didn't know that, you know, I didn't really ride. I kind of hung it up for a little while and focused on him. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to, my parents are like fantastic. Like I, you know, everybody says their parents are the best, but like, I really can't stress mine have been my rock through everything for my husband and I. And they helped so much with him, and they have such a great relationship with him. And that obviously helps me so much when it comes to our businesses. Because we, you know, we have that support. They're about 2 hours from me, which is hard, but I mean, my mom will sit and FaceTime with him while I'm trying to pound out some tack in my shop, or on the weekends when we're showing horses, a lot of times they'll take him for the weekend, and we're just really blessed to have them and their support in our life too.
Now, I'm assuming you probably just grew up around horses, right? And your husband did too?
So my husband did, yes. He pretty much like cut his teeth on a saddle horn. I did not. It was something I always wanted. My family was not into it. I was the youngest of three, and I always had, my dad had always, he is an entrepreneur, and he had always instilled that in the three of us. And from the time I can remember, I just always put money in the bank, money in the bank, money in the bank. And when I was in, a freshman in high school, I had saved enough to buy my first horse. I had been like leasing horses probably from the time I was in we'll say fourth, fifth grade. And yeah. By the time I was a freshman in high school, that's when I purchased my first horse. And my parents took care of board and things like that because we didn't live on a farm. And every chance that I had, whether it be trail riding, cleaning stalls, I actually started out really, one of my very first jobs was I would go to festivals and like the pony rides. I was that girl that walked ponies all day long. And I can remember.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. I used to work at like local festivals for this lady, and I made $50 a day, and let me tell you, I thought I was like rolling in it, and I worked my butt off for that $50 a day.
I was fixing to say that you didn't sit down at all.
I would start at like 7:30 in the morning. I would go over and help her brush ponies and load them and get them ready, and I would walk all day long, and then I'd go back with her because I just loved it. That's what I wanted. And so when I was a freshman in high school, we ended up buying my first horse. My parents helped pay board, and then I got lucky enough. A good friend of mine, Jess Dury, her grandfather had pretty much taken me under his wing and kind of was letting me ride. They rode pleasure horses at the time, and I just kind of got to dabble in different things. And
now you do barrels, right?
Yes, I rode hunters for a while, and now we barrel race. And that's my husband's, he was bigger into the futurity horses. Obviously, like when we had Keaton, life kind of changed and whatnot, but we have some really good stock coming up in the barn that we're pretty excited about. So we hopefully here in the next year or so, you're going to hopefully see good things from us. So you guys, I just started, like, I just wanted it, and I just kept going for it every way. And my dad and mom were super supportive, and my dad, it's funny, quick story. We partnered on a horse that was a $2,500 horse, and it was a 2-year-old, and put time on it and got it going. And I mean, heck, I didn't know what I was doing then. And we sent it out for 30 days, and I just kind of went on with them. And it was just, you know, one of those things, God looks out for the dumb, and he watched over me for sure. And
hold on, I like that. You said God helps out the dumb. Is that what you said?
Yes, he watches over the dumb, because if I would do the things today that I did then, like, I would be in a world of trouble.
Yeah, I think I've kept him busy many times in my life.
Yes, and so anyway, long story short, my dad and I were partners on this horse, and now he was my initial business partner, and I was probably a senior in high school at this point, and the horse he was just one of the good ones. He came on, I won a ton in the youth, some in the open, and we ended up selling the horse for like $15,000, and I was like, well, here's your initial investment. And my dad's like, oh no, like, we're partners. And I'm like, but you haven't paid anything on this horse. Like, you know, when I was in high school, I worked 2 jobs, and because I wanted horses and this is what I wanted to do. And my dad's like, no, you didn't set the terms. Like, you didn't say I was I've just been a silent partner. Like, you never told me. So like, half of this money is mine. And I remember being so mad and just, that's not fair. And this and that, my dad's like, you have to set the terms when you go into business. You want to be a businesswoman, you set the terms. And he did put that money aside for me for college and whatnot. Like, it was not a big deal. He gave it to me anyway, but it That lesson has stuck with me all these years, that the I's will be dotted and the T's will be crossed, because your idea and my idea in business might be two completely different things.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, that's a good thing that he took the time to teach you that, because, you know, there's some people out there that think they're doing business and they don't think about none of the...
Absolutely. Like, I mean, my husband, I mean, he truly is a very kind soul, and he thinks that a handshake is a handshake. And unfortunately, this world just isn't what it once was. And as terrible as it is to think like somebody's word isn't their word, like, you know, we've had clients that have, you know, promised security horses or this or that, and the horse gets pulled for whatever reason, and, or the horse ends up going to a different trainer, or they decide they're going to run it, or whatever. And it's just like, you know, at this point, like, you can only do it for so long before you're like, you know what, we should probably put it in writing.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you just can't, I think that's what I was trying to say. You know, there's so much about business, the dark side of business is what I'm getting at, that people just want to put on rose-colored glasses, but you can't if you just want to bend over for the rest of your life. Nobody wants to do that, you know, so you just can't trust people. It's just reality. You know, you have to do those hard things you don't want to do. You know, I've had conversations and sent emails and stuff, and I did not want to do it. But it was what needed to be done, because that's the other side of business. It kind of, you know, it sucks, but like you
definitely. It does, and it's hard. I mean, there's
it is. You know,
there's times that your clients become your friends, and when you have to have those hard conversations, it's like, how do I go about doing this without hurting feelings? But then it's like, you know what, like, in all reality, like, my feelings are getting hurt, or my livelihood's getting hurt, because they've decided that they shouldn't have to do this because they've now become a friend versus a client. And that's a hard line to straddle, is that friendship client line, because, you know, a good client does become a good friend over years and years and years. And it's hard to tell them how it is sometimes. And sometimes feelings do get hurt, and that's never the intention. You know, that's one thing in my business I, in one sense, really hold myself high with this. But in another sense, it's been hurtful to my business is honesty. Like, whether you're a good friend, a client, whatever, like, I'm going to be honest with you. Like, if I think your horse looks a little off, or your horse is a little out of shape, or whatever, I'm going to tell you. If you ask, I'm going to tell you. And don't get upset if it's not what you want to hear. And even in the tack business, going back to that girl that had that tack set a year, like, she didn't want to hear, yes, I'll fix it, but you have to cover the shipping. Like, she just wanted to hear what she wanted to hear. And that was, sure, I'll give you your money back. You've had it a year and you lost a crystal on it for God knows what reason. But sure, I'll give you your money back. And that's, this industry has just, that's one thing, you know, in the Western industry and culture, like, I definitely myself struggle with that in business, is that, you know, even with selling horses, like, that's one thing I want you to know, the good, the bad, the ugly. And sometimes that ugly outweighs that good. And then people are like, well, you don't want to sell me the horse, why don't you just say that? And I'm like, no, it's not that. I just want you to know everything, so you don't come back and say, hey, the horse was X, Y, and Z, and you didn't tell me. No, I want you to know we call her Sybil for a reason. So
yeah. It's like that old saying, you know, my brain then went sideways. You know, you would rather, or when you used to get whoopings when you were little, and I used to get whoopings when I was little, which was not a lot, knock on wood, I was a good kid. But your parents would say, you know, this hurts me more than it hurts you.
And sure,
I can relate to that when it comes to business, because I hate having to be blunt and honest, and I hate having to do, you hate having to do some of the things that you have to do and say. But at the end of the day, you know that honesty, even if it's harsh or not, or they don't want to hear it, at the end of the day, they're more than likely going to trust you more than they would the person that just, you know, kisses their ass or just says
Absolutely.
Whatever, you know.
And, you know, that's one thing, like, it's been hard, because you watch clients that you've bent over backwards for and you have done absolutely everything for them to let them succeed. Because, you know, when I have a client that succeeds, that's just the same as me, you know, winning that first division check when they win it, because it's part of my program, you know. And that's one thing, like, it's kind of like a round robin effect. Like, a lot of times, I mean, I've had clients that they didn't like what I had to say or how I said it or whatever, I hurt their feelings, and they've moved on. But it seems that they always come back. And I feel like with honest, as long as you're honest, like, they do come back. And if they don't, like, it probably wasn't meant to be anyway. So,
yeah.
And that's a hard, you know, that's easy for me to say now, but I promise you, 5, 6, 8 years ago, that is not how I felt. Like, I struggled when I would lose a client. And I mean, I would weigh that situation 10 times over and figure out why. And I wanted to know why. And sometimes you just don't know why. And you just got to roll on with it, whether that be maturity or just being in the business long enough or whatever. It's definitely something I've struggled with, and I've kind of come to terms with over the last few years, is you got to watch out for you. And not that you're not wanting to see others do well or whatnot, but your main focus has to be you before you put others ahead of you.
Yeah, well, like they say, I mean, you can't pour from an empty cup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of people can get that kind of misconstrued, you know, taking care of yourself. You can't help nobody else if you're not taking, you know, take care of yourself initially. And then, you know, I think any business hates to lose a customer, but like what you just said, sometimes you have to, if you know that you've done everything that you can and you can sleep at night, then there's nothing else you can do. That's it.
Absolutely. That's all you can do. And, you know, I always say to myself, like, if I can look in the mirror at the end of the day and lay my head down at night, then that's all that matters. And, you know, I've had people in the horse world, you know, like I said, I didn't come from a family that was into horses. Like, I mean, you want to talk about rock bottom, buddy. Like, I knew nothing, like, absolutely nothing. And I took in everything that I possibly could. And I've worked my way up. And that's one thing. I'm not the best out there. I'm not the worst out there. And you can, I always tell people, like, I've had lesson programs and, you know, have given lessons, and some of my kids and adults have gone on and, you know, won the amateur at the BFA and have won Quarter Horse Congress and things like that. And maybe I haven't achieved that myself, but my students have. And that's one thing that, you know, it's just going back to the business end of it. It's really important to remember, like, you can't put all those eggs in one basket, and you have to keep yourself going in order to keep everyone else going.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's funny you just said that, because I've always thought, as a consumer, like, from a consumer's perspective, which we never could afford a trainer. Like, I had to figure it out on my own and do that. You know, I just, back then, you didn't
like
have,
me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what I was just fixing to get at. You know what I'm saying when we say rock bottom. What the generation has now for the horse industry, they don't even know how good they got it. Because back then, you didn't have YouTube. You didn't have Clinton Anderson. You didn't have Clint. You couldn't hop on the internet and be like, yo, what kind of bit do I use for this? Or what? Why would
you? Absolutely.
You could figure it out on your own.
Sure. And that's one thing. Like, I think back how I started, and I mean, I had this, one of the pony ride ponies that, like, I walked around, the lady that owned them, she let me use one for 4-H. And I mean, I wanted to be a barrel racer. That's what I wanted to do. And it was this little appy pony that had no desire to go fast. But I mean, I had a smile ear to ear, and it took me like a minute and 10 seconds to run a gosh darn pole pattern. But like, that's what I was doing. And in my mind, I was getting it, you know? And, now, like, I'm blessed. I have some nice horses, and I'm really lucky. A horse that I actually got in last year to sell. It's kind of funny how that works. As far as timing, I guess, in business, I had
sold a horse and I had bought this mare and, you know, this is what I do for a living. And I got taken on her and it was terrible. It was a terrible, terrible situation. And the mare had a career ending injury. Like it was a bad situation. And the owner just kind of blew it off and was like, you didn't do a vet check and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, this isn't how I do business, but you know, it is what it is. But long story short, I ended up getting this horse in to sell for this girl. And like her and I, we just clicked. Like she was like a 4D horse when the girl dropped her off. She's like 3D, 4D. And the mare has never run any less than top of the 2D for me. She won like our state finals last year. I mean, she's been rock solid, rodeos, you name it. And I had four people come and try her and she bronked for everybody. And it was like, what in the world is happening? Because she had never done it for me. And these people, the owners at the time, they were like, listen, you know, we want you to have her. Like, and I wasn't in for a horse right then. Like, I wasn't in that position to be able to buy. And they worked a deal with me. And it's funny, though, because, you know, going back to, like, the 4-H days and that pony that I started on, and now, you know, I've been able to grow as a horseman and as a businesswoman and, you know, a person in general. And now I've been able to take horses, like, for instance, a horse that didn't work for somebody else has been great for me. And just being able to, you know, grow with everything, like, it's a neat situation to see where I came from in a sense of not a horse related background or family or anything. And now I have some fantastic horses in the barn, and it's just a neat situation. So,
well, that's good. I mean, that just basically shows that you said I'm going to do it and you did it. So
yes, and that's one thing, sorry to interrupt you, that's one thing, like, with this generation, you know, you were saying how like these kids today, they don't realize how good they have it, and they really don't. Because, and some of them I'm sure do, I shouldn't say none of them do,
right?
But like, it absolutely, I mean, they're getting, you know, $150,000 horses that are just jam up, and they've got a trainer and this and that. And, you know, that's one thing that this industry, like, I'm interested to see where it goes with the up and coming, because,
well, just the knowledge that is out there, that
yes,
is easily obtainable. It's like, There's some things where, you know, the period where you and I grew up, you know, we could actually make the excuse like we don't know what we're doing. We don't know how to find the information. But now
yes,
it's so readily available. It's almost like you should be.
And I will say, like, one that I absolutely love, like, is that, like, Clint Anderson, like, his methods I think are fantastic. And, like, the between the reins, and there, like you said, you can get on YouTube and there's so much knowledge readily available at people's fingertips today. And, you know, it's definitely, even, you know, just being able to ride with other people. Like, I'm lucky my husband's done this his whole life, and he's been able to start some fantastic colts. And we have a very good client, 5L Farm, and he starts their young ones. And we were able to sale prep one for the Ruby Buckle last year, and he was the second high seller. And, you know, my husband had 30 days, 45 days on him. And, like, he went out there like a rock star, because, you know, the biggest thing is just being dedicated to your business will make your business succeed. And that's one thing, like, with this up-and-coming generation, like you said, being able to find that knowledge online, and then, you know, maybe just shooting out a message on Facebook, like, hey, like, this is the issue I'm having and blah, blah, blah. I mean, obviously, like, the couch jockeys, like people say from the NFR and things like that, I mean, you're going to have that. But there's a lot of times, like, between the reins and things like that answer a lot of those things for these kids.
Well, I've always thought that to myself. I mean, it's got to be, I don't know if it hinders the training horse aspect of the industry or not, having so much knowledge out there. It's almost like, because, you know, when I was younger, and you went to horse shows, and I remember when I was little, I used to go up to, like, these people I admired and these trainers and stuff and ask them how to do stuff, and they wouldn't talk to you. Like, it was hush-hush. Like, nobody told you how to do anything. You either paid to do it, or, you know, figure it out on your own. And it's almost like, I wonder if that almost hinders that aspect of the industry having all of that knowledge out there.
You know, I think that it kind of, yes and no. Like, that's a double-edged sword question there, because yes, that knowledge is there, but unless you really know how to apply it, it yeah. doesn't matter if you have it or not, because you're not going to know when to use it. So I still do think that even though the knowledge is out there on the internet and social media and things like that, I still think having like that set of eyes in the arena watching you and coaching you, you know, I always tell like my clients that, you know, one of my rules is you have to ride every week with me. Like if you're going to take lessons with me, it has to be weekly. It cannot be once a month, every other week, whatever. You play soccer, you play basketball, anything like that. It's a 5-day-a-week deal. You know, you don't go to your coach and say, well, I have this going on and that going on and so on and so forth. Like, they're going to look at you like you're crazy. It's right. No different in the horse world. Like, you have to, you want to be great, you better dedicate yourself to it, because you can't learn. And that's one thing, you know, like, my husband's a farrier and he also rides. And this time of year, he takes a lot of training horses, and mainly like right now we've got 6 or 7 2-year-olds in the barn, and we have a girl coming in and she's kind of doing an internship deal. And she, like, he told her it's a three day in a row deal. Like, you either come, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, whatever, but it's got to be 3 days in a row, because that's when you see the most progress. And there's been a couple weeks, like, things just didn't work out. She lives like an hour or so from us, and she has said numerous times, like, when she's missed, you know, 2, 3, 4 days, whatever, a week, she can't believe in that time, like, the progression that has been made. And that's one thing, like, back to what you were just saying, even though all of that knowledge is out there, like, I think that's one thing that it is a little bit right now being, is like, you know, kind of forgotten about, is that trainer being able to you know, being a coach to mm-hmm. your kid or whatever, or yourself. You know, I'm lucky enough, there's little things that, you know, before I used to kind of have a chip on my shoulder towards my husband. He's 12 years older than me, and I was like, well, I worked at Empress Arabians, this national renowned Arabian farm, and blah, 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 and I did this, and it was kind of like I had like entitlement that I was just as good, but years of knowledge and hands-on experience is better than anything that I could have read. And now, like, it's such a blessing having him right at my fingertips, because just the other day I was riding a colt and I said to him, I'm like, she's just doing this. And like, I just feel like I can't get her body to work the way I want it to. And her front end's here and her hind end's there. And he's like, why don't you just try this? And he's like, you know, she's not doing X, Y, and Z because you need to do X, Y, and Z to get her prepared for that. And yeah, like, I had the knowledge of what to do, but I just couldn't apply it right. And that's one thing, like, you know, I guess my answer to your question there was, yes, I do think all the knowledge out there is fantastic, but I also think that it's not always applied correctly. And that's where I think, like, this business, as far as the horses, comes into play. And having a good trainer that can coach you through it.
Yeah, because horses isn't like, it's not like softball or basketball. It's not like working out at home or, I mean,
sure.
You know, you're dealing with another living, breathing thing. It's a whole lot different.
Absolutely. And, you know, one day they come out and they ride fantastic, and then the next day it's like you took 15 steps backwards. So that's...
And they wonder why people call horse girls crazy. I mean, we're really not crazy. We're just, we're like, it's the only sport, literally, it's like the only sport that deals with another living, breathing thing.
I mean, you don't, like, you know, no matter what your passion is, you dump your heart and soul into it. But like with horses, you're dumping your heart and soul, but really to be, have that competitive edge and be that competitor, you need that horse, your partner, to dump their heart and soul into it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you've probably seen a lot of the difference between, you know, well, what do you prefer? Do you have a preference as far as gender is concerned? Like, do you prefer mares or do you prefer geldings or do you like?
So it's funny you ask that. I've had geldings that have won and I've had mares that have won. I myself don't really have a preference. I've had good of both. I know my husband, like, he prefers a gelding. We both actually have 2-year-old stud colts in right now, both by the Goodbye Lane. His is out of Honor This Nonstop that Jeff Garner owns, and mine is out of C4 Dark Patch Patsy that 5L Farm owns, and they're both, you know, like, I don't mean to sound arrogant, but they're both phenomenal bred colts, and we had contemplated keeping them studs, and my husband's colt, like, he just does not have the mind for it, so he needs to be a gelding as soon as possible. And mine, he's much more level-headed, and right now, like, if he can hold it together and become a great athlete as a stud, fantastic. But that, there's no, studs are hard, plain and simple, and not every horse deserves to be a stud. But I, as far as getting back to your question, as far as that goes, I've had success on all studs, mares, and geldings. I honestly, it doesn't matter. I think if they have the heart and the willpower, it doesn't matter. But I know there's a lot of people out there that prefer one or the other.
Yeah, there's a lot of like stipulations to them. And I'm like, you know, these aren't true. Like, you just have to go by the horse. It's not.
Yes. And one thing I feel people have gotten caught up in is, I want a mare because if she gets hurt, I can breed her. But just like a stud, I mean, not every mare should be bred, in my opinion. And I know myself, like, I've had 2 mares, one that I had talked previously about in this conversation that I had bought that had a career-ending injury that wasn't disclosed, and she was so crippled, she would have never been able to carry a foal. Like, she would have foundered on that other leg, and it would have been a bad situation. So, like, right there, she was an Eddie Stinson daughter. I mean, she was phenomenal, but she couldn't be
that. That would pile on the lines of a moral decision there, like an ethics
absolutely
decision.
Absolutely, and that, like, was, you know, she unfortunately had to be put down because of it, and that was a tough situation because it was like, and that was one thing the vet and I discussed, like, you know, she could potentially be a broodmare down the road, but, like, you know, is that fair to her? And it wasn't. And I had another mare that we had raised and I had rodeoed, and, you know, she was my heart horse and I loved her, and we had a lot of success together. And unfortunately, she had ended up with a coffin bone infection, and kind of the same thing. Like, that's like, we could probably save her to be a brood mare, but, like, at this point, like, that mare owed me nothing, and she didn't deserve to have to live in a stall the rest of her life and make me babies because I wanted that from her, you know? And I know a friend of mine, like, they had their horse insured and she'd gotten hurt and they did everything. Come to find out a year later when they went to breed her, like, she didn't even have ovaries. So, you know, that's one thing with mares.
Is that possible?
I guess it is. I guess
Holy
it is.
Cow,
I
know that.
I had never ever heard that before. And yeah, that was a thing with her, is she had them, but they were like teeny tiny and they weren't producing anything. So, like, insurance had saved this mare because they said, well, you can breed her down the road. And that wasn't the case. So that's one thing I feel personally is a misconception in our industry is, oh, if it's a mare, I can breed it down the road. But, you know, if there's a gelding that is just as good and has more heart than this mare over here, I would not be worried about breeding it down the road. I would buy that gelding all day.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what I, like, you know, you just see different memes and different people say, people are like, you know, if we don't like a mare, then go get a gelding. Or if you don't, well, I mean, I've seen some pretty crazy geldings and some calm mare. Like, I've seen all of it.
Yeah.
So it's like,
well, I don't mean to say all of it like that, but, you know, you've seen both aspects of it, and you're like, okay, y'all, like, it's just not, you just got to go with the horseback, because you can get just as much heart from a gelding as you can a mare.
Absolutely, and, like, my husband, all of his success has been with gelding. Like, he had a gelding, like, he ran the top, well, he was top 5 and top 10 at the BFA and the Derby, and, you know, that gelding was just his freaking nature, to be honest with you. He went on and won with his family. I had the chance to ride him a little bit. He won with me. I mean, he was just one of those horses. It didn't matter who sat on him. He won. And he was just a cowbred gelding that went on to win at the top level.
Now, I don't know much about the whole breeding part, but you just touched on something that I want to ask about. Now, in the barrel world, because obviously I don't know anything about barrels. In the barrel world, I've seen a lot of people talk about cowbred within their programs and, you know, and the horses that they breed and stuff like that. Why would cowbred matter when it comes to barrel horses?
So this is probably going to be a touchy subject for some of the listeners. You know, some people love cow horses and some don't. I personally think that this industry has become so, you know, with all of the technology and the availability to be able to, for instance, do ICSI. And I mean, at the end of the day, you can pick it. Like, you can have these embryo sexed if you're going to have a mare or stud and all these things. And it's become such an elite sport as far as the breeding end, because you're breeding great barrel horses to great barrel horses, that people will say, oh, well, this cow horse can't compete with that. And yes, some cannot, but yes, there are some very talented cow horses out there that, you know, you breed them to a top barrel sire and you're probably going to get one phenomenal athlete. Like, it, at least in my opinion, do I think that, you know, years ago you could take just an average horse and make it a barrel horse and be competitive? Yes. Those days are gone, in my opinion, to be able to compete at those top levels. Like, you have to, you know, you do have to breed to the best, because that's just, you know, it's just like, you know, you or I have a child and Michael Jordan has a child, like, his child's probably going to be tall and athletic and be a basketball player, where ours might not be. You know, it's the same thing with the horses. Like, you breed that top athlete to a top athlete, you're going to get an athlete. And that's one thing. I think it just depends. You know, like, the mare that I'm running right now, she is cowbred. She goes back to streaking 6 on the top side, and bottom side, she's all cow. And to be honest with you, she's something I would not have ever looked at. I would have turned my nose up to. Like, I'm being completely honest. Like, she was not my style horse whatsoever. Like, she's kind of common-headed, just common. She's a solid bay, and she's not bred the part. But let me tell you, that mare will run her guts out for me, and she gives me her heart every time. And to me, that's a horse down the road. Would I like to breed her down the road? Absolutely. But I would be very particular what I bred her to. Like, I would want to breed her to, you know, one of the top barrel studs, like Jail Dash to Heaven, the Goodbye Lane, something like that, just to be able to give her that little extra edge that she probably will need for her foal to be that much better.
Well, don't you think that, you know, I think more people are realizing that there is some talent that you can tap into when it comes to the cow horse that can be usable in all these other disciplines that you wouldn't normally think. You know, you've got horses out there on these ranches that work tenfold circles around some of these, the athletes that people are used to thinking a horse to be, but there are horses out there on ranches that just could go all day long. Imagine tapping into that.
Absolutely. Well, and that's one thing, you know, when I myself am looking for a horse, you know, I look for, obviously, conformation, pedigree, and obviously, you know, looks, colors, that always sells. Now, that's, like, the last thing I look for, even though, like, I'm a sucker for a Palomino or a gray. But,
at the end of the day, like, confirmation beats everything for me. And that's one thing, like, with these cow horses, that they tend to really, that's where they, in my opinion, you know, their athleticism comes from their confirmation, their short hocks, their short back, their catty, they're all those things that we look for in an athletic horse. So yes, like, obviously Yellowstone, like, I mean, heck, those rain cow horses that they had on there, and the Rainers and the Cutters. I mean, that's one thing I've never been able to dabble in. My husband has, and that's one thing I would love to do one day is rain cow horse. But, I just think the cow horses, like, we had a stud horse years ago, my husband had before we even got together. And, he was a double sugar bars bred stud, which is, goes back to the cow horses, and people would joke, oh, he's a cow pony. But let me tell you, that quote unquote cow pony put a ton of 1D barrel horses on the ground at all levels.
They are tough.
Yeah. And that's one thing, you know, I feel like years ago, like, you would take that horse and you would run it in barrels and pulls and another barrel class and so on and so forth. And now, you know, we want run one class and we roll our time into these other classes because we don't want them to have to make another run, or we don't want this, or, you know, God forbid they bleed or this or that. And, you know, is it we've bred that hardiness out of them? I don't know. But, like, I'll tell you what, like you said, those, some of those ranch horses and cow horses, I mean, they work all day long, and they love their job, you know. And
well, you just made me think about something. You don't hear about those people doing Lasix or bleeding or any of that type of stuff, which not that they're running like feral horses or pole horses are running, you know, but they are working hard. I wonder if it's just a matter of the work on their body. Is a difference,
you know? I don't know. Like, I've had some bleeders, and I've had obviously horses that haven't bled. And
yeah,
is it just more something that is known now than it was before? I don't have the answer to that, but it's definitely something that I find interesting. And I know myself in my program, like, that's one thing, like, if you send me a sale horse or a horse in training, like, that sucker is going to have its ass rode off. Like, I mean, yeah, that is one thing, like, they're getting rode. You're not paying to have this horse stand in the barn. Like, that sucker's getting rode. And, you know, especially with, like, training horses and sale horses, like, my husband always jokes, like, I always do better on those horses than my own because I love on my own. And he's like, your training horses and your sale horses, they respect you. They know it's this or it's I'm going to get looped into the ground or whatever, you know. And that's one thing, like, the mare that I'm running now, I had some success on her, and I was like, oh, I love this mare. And, you know, here, have the MagnaWave, and let me beamer you, and let me put your magnets on, and, like, all these things. And she's like, I got this girl wrapped around my finger. And I gave her some time off this winter, and she came back, and she just kind of half-heartedly was going through it. And last week I was like, listen, you heifer, you best get your head out of your butt, because I'm not liking being, you know, in the second division. I want to win again. And, you know, I kind of put it back in her, the ball back in her court. Like, you want to go back to being worked hard and every single day and whatnot until you step up, that's fine. And I mean, I really worked her hard last week, and it paid off. She went to the barrel race, and she was second in the open, and, you know, she did a good job. But that's one thing, like, you know, it's hard to, again, like we talked earlier, that straddling that line of client and friendship, and same thing with your horse. I mean, they're your partner too, and loving them versus them respecting you. And, you know, you got to have that respect first.
That's what I was fixing to say. It's probably, I bet you, I don't want to say winners, but in order to be successful, well, just like you just said it yourself, not that you do more for your client forces, but that's your business part. So you
sure.
Make it business. You take the emotion out of it, and that's why
absolutely.
They not necessarily do better, but you know what I'm getting at. So
they do better.
Yeah, in order to succeed, you have to take that emotion out of it. But we just talked about this last time. It's hard to do because you're right. You love them and you don't want them hurt and stuff. But, you know, you got to get rid of that.
I always tell my husband, I'm like, I just want a dumb horse. Like, I just want a dumb one that I can just, you know, they're just like, oh, she's here riding again. Woohoo.
No, you probably wouldn't like it. I get the feeling you probably wouldn't like it. You probably, because me, the smarter they are, it seems like it's more challenging for me. But a few years ago, one of the top owners in the barrel horse industry had sent me a two-year-old to get going, to get broke and whatnot. And it was going to go to Troy Crumrine after me. And I was like, almost like that kid with stars in my eyes, like, oh my gosh, like I'm getting this opportunity. And I made it so much more like mechanical, and the horse had to do this. And it, instead of just going and doing it and putting that saddle time in and letting the horse come together, I almost forced everything because that pressure was there. And I look back now and I'm like, man, I wish I would have just done me, you know, like, I think I had said to you, like, one of my slogan for Chrome Girl is don't hate my hustle. And it really applies to my life in general, because that's it. Like, you just can't, you just got to do you. So. Well, what I think probably one of the hardest things I've dealt with, you might have dealt with it too, is I don't want to say the word jealousy, but I just want to say, like,
oh, good God, yes.
Well, it's a touchy word because I don't view myself as having anything to be jealous of, and I don't really worry about other
sure.
people, but you do have those people out there that literally come out of nowhere and they just hate you. Like, there's absolutely nothing you can do about it.
It is so funny that you say that, because a friend of mine and I were actually talking about one of your podcasts and how this girl, the girl that you were talking to, she was saying how, like, there's mean girls and how, like, they've made these Facebook groups that, like, just, it's like a group to specifically
hate. They exist.
Yes, and it is true, and it's so sad. Like, it is so sad. And my girlfriend was like, listen, I'm just waiting for the day that there's, like, a Facebook group that's, like, I hate Kelsey Grow or we hate Kelsey Grow. And I was like, are you, like, at first I was kind of like, seriously? And she was like, people do, like, they love to hate you. And I hate to sound like, oh, I have all these haters, because it's not
right.
really haters. Like, you know, I had said earlier in this conversation, there's times that I struggled with things, whether it be clients or this or that. And that was one thing, like, for years, I'm like, why does this person, like, why won't they say hello to me? Or why do they not this or whatever? And that is actually kind of how Chrome Girl, that slogan, don't hate my hustle. Like, I started putting it on t-shirts and it said, don't hate my hustle. And it had a peace sign. And, it was that exactly. Like, you don't like what I do and you don't like me. That's fine. Like, that's you. Don't hate my hustle because you're miserable with what you're doing. And
right.
that was a hard pill to swallow. Like, that was a hard, because I'm very much a people pleaser and I want you to like me and I want to like you. Like, and it was very hard for me there for a long time. And it was like, you know, I had even said that, like, I've lost friends over the years for whatever reason. And
yeah,
it comes down to that exactly. And I hate even saying it out loud. Like, it comes down to jealousy. And just like you just said, because I feel this way, like, I had said this to my girlfriend and I said this to my husband the other night, like, what are they jealous of? Like, I work my ass off to have what I have. Like, and it's exhausting. But it's that whole facade of social media and things like that, where from the outside, like, people are like, oh, she has a farm and she has a husband and she has this and she's that and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, like, yes, I'm very blessed with the life that I live and the life that I have. But,
well, and I think that it's usually people that don't want to look at themselves, so they have to find something else to pick on or bother or, you know, exert those feelings towards something else. And you just, you know, it ends up being a target. And it's just like, for me, it's not, and I always feel weird when I say this, it's not that I want people to like me. I would love for people to like me. It's the fact that I am attached to my business, which is attached to my livelihood. That's why I don't like to have to drop.
You are the face of your business. And, like, you can't. I mean, I know, like, years ago, like, you know, when I was, like, 22 and I was, in my mind, like, hot shit and doing my thing and whatever, like, you know, I made those mistakes of going to a horse show and it was, you know, a weekend long deal and maybe drinking too much and just having a good time thinking I'm having a good time. But everybody else from the outside is watching and judging and going, well, I wouldn't send my horse there. I wouldn't want to buy from her. Look at her or whatever, you know, like, whatever. But that's exactly it. You are the face of your business. So you have to care to a degree what others think because you are in the industry of people. Like that's how you make your livelihood is through people. You don't go clock in and punch a clock 9 to 5. Like you have to, in a sense, be a people pleaser to a degree. And
just made me think about something. Are you selective with the horses that you bring in or do you just take in anything? Like
I'm selective. So I don't take any outside horses to break. Like that's not my gig. My husband does that. But same with him. Like he's built himself up. You know, he has a reputation and whatnot.
Right.
And he's been lucky enough that he has some nice horses in right now. And, as far as training horses for myself, like I try not to take anything that, has like dangerous qualities, like something that rears and flips or things like that. I mean, obviously that happens sometimes and you, as much as I try and censor what I bring in for myself, like it doesn't always happen. I'm lucky enough. I have a pretty good clientele that, you know, they get new horses in regularly and I kind of get them started and we go on from there. But my main thing with the horses is probably more consignment horses than training horses, just because I've found that's probably my best gig. And that's one thing that I am really particular on what I take. Like I don't want a horse that has an issue, like going in the pen or running the rail or something like that. Like I want good, solid horses that I can match with riders that are going to go on and have a good, solid career and change so much. And here, I don't know if it was all the COVID money or what had happened, but I mean, hell, like it was amazing through COVID and everything. Selling horses, like you would have thought that it would have fallen off the map, but it was booming. And the horse prices just got crazy. And that was what
they really
like,
did.
Yeah, and it was crazy. I mean, like, it was just crazy. And that was one thing, like, I really tried to stay as true to the industry as possible was just because prices have inflated right now, I still want to sell you that horse for what I feel it's worth. And whether they're inflated today and they drop down tomorrow, that horse is still going to be worth what you paid today as it will be 30 days from now or whatever, because I might be able to hook you for $30,000 for a horse that's a 2D, 3D horse and not that great. But if you're not getting along with it and you come back and you expect to get that money back, I might not be able to hook another person. So it's really important to me to like value that horse for what it's truly worth and not what it, or what I feel it's truly worth, I should say, and not what the, you know, integrated prices are right now. And
well, I was fixing to say that's probably a thin line to pull horses into that aspect of the economy, because so many people still, I don't want to say hobby, but it's still, it's a luxury hobby. It's a luxury sport. It's not, you
sure.
know, but it's still kind of like a thin line of, does the inflation really even affect the horse industry like it would everything else? As far as horse prices are concerned, not necessarily gas and things of that nature.
Right. I do think like the buckles, like pink and ruby and those things, I think that has changed, you know, the average horse versus like we touched on earlier, like with the breeding end of it and stuff. Like, you know, yes, there are, you can't, some of these horses, like when you're breeding to a stallion that has a $10,000 stud fee, obviously that baby, when it hits the ground, is not a $5,500 horse. You know, like,
hold on. I don't mean to cut you off. Are those worth it? Like, is it worth it to invest into those things? Because I see them everywhere.
I think it depends what you as a rider are doing. Like, I myself, my husband and I, we do have pink and ruby buckles in the barn. And I think if you are doing it the right way, like you're paying them in when you should be and not paying them in, and then you have to pay like the $3,000 late fees versus the $200, you know, yearly payment, and you can go to those and get in the money, absolutely it's worth it. Like, if you're not going to, like, for instance, like, we're in Pennsylvania, so driving to Oklahoma, that's a drive. Like, no doubt, that is a drive. But if, you know, if you have one that is a standout, it is absolutely worth doing. But, you know, the average Joe might not want to drive to Oklahoma, and they just might want that solid 2D-er that they can go to their local horse show, their local MBHA or IBRA or whatever, and be competitive, because the caliber of a 1D horse, you know, at the pink buckle is going to be a little bit different than what it is possibly at your local 1D barrel race. And, you know, back to the buckles and things like that, like, yes, I do think that, I think it's an investment into your hobby as far as if you sell that horse or things like that, or if you do plan on
what your end game is.
Yes. And I think you have to be honest with yourself with that. Like, I see a lot of people that buy them and they're like, oh, I have a pink buckle horse, but they're never going to haul to Oklahoma. So for them to have it, I mean, is it a status thing? I mean, heck, I don't know. But I myself, like, we have, I'm trying to think, 4 or 5 right now in the barn. And yeah, like, it is an investment every year, keeping them paid up and things like that. I mean, it's $400 a horse every year. And, you know, you times that by multiple horses, it does get pricey. But if those horses are what we feel that they will become, it's absolutely worth the investment.
Yeah. But like you just said, you're going to get a return on it because you're doing it for the return on it. Whereas some people, it probably is just a status thing at this point, you know.
Too, like, being paid in versus being eligible for. And that's when you're buying a horse, those are important words to focus on.
What is the difference? Now you done got me all like, what do you mean eligible? You can't just pink buckle.
So pink buckle, you have until the pink and ruby, you have until they're 3-year-olds to pay them in. And there are like different things that they offer. Like the pink buckle came out with, I think it's called the Premier Pink, where the horse can be any age. It costs $3,000 to pay them in as long as they have never been paid in before. So on and so forth. So, you know, when you're buying a horse and it says, okay, this horse is eligible for pink and ruby and future fortunes, for instance, we'll just say those three things, and the horse is a 3-year-old, well, you're going to have $3,000 to pay them into pink, $2,000 or $3,000, don't quote me on that. It's two or three for sure to pay them in with the late fees to pink and into ruby. So you're going to have anywhere from $4,000 to $6,000 into paying them into those things because that person selling them didn't pay them up. So to me, I find it frustrating, to be honest with you. And I don't look at those horses, because if they want, we'll just say, you know, $16,000 for this 3-year-old that is loping the pattern and it's eligible, well, I'm going to have $6,000 or $4,000 to pay it into those things. So to me, I'd rather
you're look at 20 the horse. Grand in it.
Yeah, I'd rather look at the horse that, you know, $16,000 that's paid into these things and is either at the same spot or maybe a little behind or a little bit ahead. I'd rather go with that one, because to me, it was a responsible breeder and owner that paid the horse into those things. Where this other horse, you're in the hole right off the bat because you got to pay it in.
Yeah, because it's not like you're going to get, it's not like you're guaranteed to get any type of return on it unless you, I mean, you're going to have to run the horse to sell it. So,
and a lot of people, they don't understand that, you know, the horse is eligible until it's three. Once it turns four, unless you do like the Premier Pink, like you're not even eligible to put it in Ruby Buckle any longer.
Oh, wow.
So that's one thing, like when you're buying horses, like eligibility and paid in are two different things.
Well, yeah, you just taught me something because I mean, I've seen it and I've looked at it. I've had customers that are all about it and all that kind of stuff. You know, I've done work for people that have horses in it and all that stuff. And it's like, okay, what are you talking about? Because I don't really know, you know, but, and I've just seen it just keep growing and keep growing and everybody keeps talking about it. And I remember a little bit, at some point in time last year, I think a lot of girls, I kept seeing posts where, you know, women and stallion owners were complaining about how much it costs to be into all of the, everybody, because we do, you know, stallion merch too. Everybody was complaining about all of the money to be into all of these incentives. And it's almost like, holy cow. Like,
sure, it gets expensive, no doubt. Like, you know, for instance, like, you start paying them in when they're weanlings. So you have, if you start paying them in as weanlings and they don't run till they're a four-year-old, I mean, you've got, you know, what, a grand into them or 800 into them or whatever, and depending what all they're in, you know, because Pink Buckle's 200 every year, Ruby, so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, like that, you know, $800 is a heck of a lot easier at 200 a year than 3,000 to get them paid in and then start making those $200 a year payments. And, you know, yes, like it does get pricey. Like that's, you know, right off the bat, like I know like every year right now with just what we have in the barn and, you know, our numbers fluctuate all the time because buying and selling and, you know, I have a broodmare that's due here in the next 2 weeks and things like that. So that number,
I have a baby.
Yes, we are. You know, those numbers fluctuate all the time. So it might be we have 800 for the year or we might have 2,800 for the year paying horses in. And you look at it, man, is it worth that? But, you know, business is a gamble. Like, if you want to be good at it, you're going to gamble at some point. And I just look at it as that's one of those gambles because, you know, Pink Ruby Buckle, like, I'm pretty sure, like, it's like $100,000 per division in the open that pays out. Like, it pays 20 holes. So, like, you, most of the time, like, you should be able to get in there somewhere eventually to get that back. Right. I mean, there's always those people that, unfortunately, they fall in the cracks every time. But, you know, like, the Pink and Ruby, I think it's a really good thing. I do think that it's brought money to the business and, you know, has really kind of spiced things up. And like slot races have gotten really big in our area. And that's, you know, that's another thing. I mean, it's like $1,000 entry fee, but you might win 50,000 back. So yes, it's a gamble, but it's a gamble I'm willing to take because I know she's solid.
Well, and you probably make a better calculated gamble versus somebody like me. It would not be smart for me to be like, all right, well, I'm going to start barrel racing and let me go drop a grand. It wouldn't be too smart for me to do it.
And again, I mean, like, I probably sound like arrogant, like, oh, I entered five of these. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, last year I ran her. It just so happened that, like, I had bought a slot and a client of ours had bought a slot and their horse wasn't measuring up. So her and I like did a partnership that, you know, after if I won whatever, like it's a 50-50 split, like, and she was good with that. And, you know, the mare, she would have pulled a check, but I happened to catch a barrel and the horse that I had in my slot, like I rode like an absolute monkey because I ran her first and I didn't want to catch a barrel on him. So I played it safe and got by everything and fell in the crap. So, but like then the next day I came in and both horses were top five in the first division. So it, you know, it's a gamble and like you got to get your mental game on straight when you start entering those things because it can quickly, you can quickly go down that rabbit hole of am I good enough or is my horse good enough or whatever. And you just got to go in and ride your ride.